The following is a review of the quantitative methods principles designed to address the learning outcome statements set forth by the CFA Institute. It is also covered in sampling and estimation. The first two LOS are to define simple random sampling and a sampling distribution, and to explain sampling error. Simple random sampling is a method of selecting a sample in such a way that each item or person in the population being studied has the same likelihood of being included in the sample. As an example of a simple random sample, assume that you want to draw a sample of 5 items out of a group of 50 items. This can be accomplished by numbering each of the 50 items, placing them in a hat, and shaking the hat. Next, one number can be drawn randomly from the hat. Repeating this process or experiment 4 more times results in a set of 5 numbers. The 5 drawn numbers or items comprise a simple random sample from the population. In applications like this, a random number table or computer-based random number generator is often used to create the sample. Another way to form an approximately random sample is systematic sampling, selecting every nth member from a population. Sampling error is the difference between a sample statistic, such as a mean variance or standard deviation, and its corresponding population parameter. For example, the sampling error for the mean is equal to the sample mean minus the population mean. It is important that you recognize that the sample statistic itself is a random variable and therefore has its own probability distribution. The sampling distribution of the sample statistic is a probability distribution of all possible sample statistics computed from a set of equal-sized samples that were randomly drawn from the same population. Think of a sampling distribution as a probability distribution for a sample of samples. For example, suppose a random sample of 100 bonds is selected from a population of a major municipal bond index consisting of 1,000 bonds, and then the mean return for the 100 bonds in the sample is calculated. Repeating this process many times will result in many different sample means. The distribution of these means is referred to as the sampling distribution of the mean. Now, it is important that you note that this sampling distribution is distinct from the distribution of the actual prices of the 1,000 bonds in the underlying population. The next LOS requires us to distinguish between simple random and stratified random sampling. Stratified random sampling uses a classification system to separate the population into smaller groups based on one or more distinguishing characteristics. From each group, or stratum, a random sample is taken and the results are pooled. The size of the samples from each group is based on the size of the group relative to the population. Stratified random sampling is often used in bond indexing because of the difficulty and cost of completely replicating the entire population of a bond index. In this case, bonds in a population are categorized or stratified according to major bond risk factors such as duration, maturity, coupon rate, or call features. Then samples are drawn from each separate category and combined to form a final sample. To see how this works, suppose you want to construct a bond portfolio that is indexed to a major municipal bond index using stratified random sampling. First, the entire population of the 1,000 bonds in the index can be classified on the basis of maturity and coupon rate. Then, groups or cells can be created for the different maturity coupon combinations, and random samples can be drawn from each of the maturity coupon cells. To sample from a cell containing 50 bonds with 2 to 4 year maturities and coupon rates less than 5%, we would select 5 bonds. The number of bonds drawn from a given cell corresponds to the cell's relative weight to the population, or 50 one-thousandths times 100 equals 5 bonds in this case. This process is repeated for all of the maturity coupon cells, and the individual samples are combined to form the portfolio. By using stratified sampling, we can guarantee that we sample 5 bonds from this cell and our final portfolio will have the same coupon maturity proportions as the bond index. If we had simply used random sampling, there would be no guarantee that we would sample any of the bonds in this cell. Or we may have selected more than 5 bonds from this cell. The next LOS asks us to distinguish between time series and cross-sectional data. A time series sample consists of observations taken over a period of time at equally spaced time intervals. The set of monthly returns on Microsoft's stock from January 1995 to January 2008 is an example of a time series data sample. Cross-sectional data, on the other hand, are a sample of observations taken at a single point in time. The sample of reported earnings per share on all NASDAQ companies for 2008 is an example of a cross-sectional data sample. Time series and cross-sectional data can be pooled in the same data set. Longitudinal data are observations over time of multiple characteristics of the same entity, such as unemployment, inflation, and GDP growth rates for a country over 10 years. Panel data contains observations over time of the same characteristics for multiple entities, such as debt-to-equity ratios for 20 companies over the most recent 24 quarters. Panel and longitudinal data are typically presented in table or spreadsheet form. The next LOS is to explain the central limit theorem and its importance. The central limit theorem states that for samples taken from a population with any distribution, as the size of the samples selected gets large, the distribution of the sample means approaches a normal probability distribution with a mean equal to the population mean and a variance equal to the population variance divided by the sample size. The central limit theorem is extremely useful because the normal distribution is relatively easy to apply to hypothesis testing and to the construction of confidence intervals. Specific inferences about the population mean can be made from the sample mean, regardless of the population's distribution, as long as the sample size is sufficiently large, which usually means that the sample size is greater than 30. Now, some important properties of the central limit theorem include, first, if the sample size n is sufficiently large, that is, greater than or equal to 30, then the sampling distribution of the sample means will be approximately normal. Now, remember what's going on here. Random samples of size n are repeatedly being taken from an overall larger population, and each of these random samples has its own mean, which is itself a random variable. And this set of sample means has a distribution that is approximately normal. The second property of the central limit theorem is that the mean of the population and the mean of the sampling distribution are equal. The final property of the central limit theorem is that the variance of the distribution of the sample means is equal to the variance of the population divided by the sample size, n. The next LOS asks us to calculate and interpret the standard error of the sample mean. The standard error of the sample mean is the standard deviation of the distribution of the sample means. When the standard deviation of the population is known, the standard error of the sample mean is equal to the standard deviation of the population divided by the square root of the sample size, n. Practically speaking, the population standard deviation is almost never known. So instead, when we calculate the standard error of the sample mean, we must estimate it by dividing the standard deviation of the sample by the square root of n. The next LOS is to identify and describe desirable properties of an estimator. Regardless of whether we are concerned with point estimates or confidence intervals, there are certain statistical properties that make some estimators more desirable than others. These desirable properties are unbiasedness, efficiency, and consistency. An unbiased estimator is one for which the expected value of the estimator is equal to the parameter you are trying to estimate. For example, because the expected value of the sample mean is equal to the population mean, the sample mean is an unbiased estimator of the population mean. An unbiased estimator is also efficient if the variance of its sampling distribution is smaller than all other unbiased estimators of the parameter in question. The sample mean, for instance, is an efficient estimator of the population mean. Now, a consistent estimator is one for which the accuracy of the parameter estimate increases as the sample size increases. As sample size increases, the standard error of the sample mean falls, and the sampling distribution is grouped more closely around the population mean. In fact, as the sample size approaches infinity, the standard error of the distribution of sample means approaches zero.